He's in the studio. He is back, joined in the studio by the fabulous Roy Tysak, who is a retired ex CID murder squad detective. You also look after, you run open mic nights as well. Manage Matthew Shepherd. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
Who's in the call? He's going to be on Bob Simpson's show singing live a little bit later. And you're also a Toastmaster.
I am indeed, yes.
You're out and about all over the place.
I do all sorts of things. I was performing live last night in Loughton Folk Club, believe it or not.
Yep.
With some funny stories and a poem, and I even sang, would you believe?
Were you there, Matthew? Did you see this?
I'm afraid I wasn't.
No.
he didn't come on purpose, actually.
he kept away. Yeah. Now, you're here with Crime Time. You come in once a month, and you cover all different topics. We were talking about car crime the other month as well.
We were, that's
right.
And
we talked about specific cases, and we're talking about a case today, which you're going to discuss, which is George Gutteridge.
That's right. PC George Gutteridge. It's one of the most famous crimes in Essex, actually, that's ever happened, and it happened back in 1927, and it was the brutal murder of a PC on his beat. Mm. The story basically is that George Gutteridge was a PC with what was then Essex Constabulary, or actually Essex County Constabulary. He joined back in April 1910, and then he retired to sign up and go into the First World War. After the war, he rejoined Essex Police, and he was living out at Stapleford Abbots. The beat from Stapleford Abbots covered quite a wide area, right out, in fact, up as far as Kelvedon Hatch, and up sort of to the edge of Ongar. And it was a very different area. Well, I say very different. Not in some ways. It's still a very rural area. A lot of listeners may know the road that runs between what is now Passingford Bridge, the Passingford Bridge roundabout, and it goes up through Stapleford Abbots and all the way down the other side to Havering Atty Bower. Well, that road was much smaller back in those days, and it was really a country lane. It was part of PC Gutteridge's beat. On this particular, or actually on the day before, on September the 26th, he had been on duty, and he had a split shift that they used to do in those days. He got home to his family at about 6 o'clock, spent the evening with his family, and then left home again at 11 p.m. to continue his duties. They used to have what they call conference points in those days, where one PC would meet up with a PC on a neighbouring beat at a designated place and time. It was a sort of a check to make sure they were both okay, and also to discuss anything they needed to know about what was going on in the area at the time. PC Gutteridge made his meet with his opposite number, who was a PC, Sydney Taylor. And they met as planned. And after that, they left at about 3:15. They separated, and PC Gutteridge was then going to walk home. Only had about a mile to go. Now, as I say, it's a very quiet country lane. And what had happened was that a car had been stolen from a doctor's house in Billericay. Mm. And as to avoid detection and to stay off the main roads, the people that stole this car decided to drive around the country lanes. When PC Gutteridge saw this car coming, he thought it was suspicious that a car would be... I mean, there weren't that many cars about for a start, yeah. So any car on the road is suspicious.
Because this was 1927.
It was indeed, and we're talking sort of 3 o'clock in the morning around country lanes. You just would not expect to see a car. So he stopped the car and began to just ask them what they were doing, who they were. Now, this is why it really becomes such a senseless murder, because... If they hadn't stopped, for example, if they'd just driven past him, there were no radios in those days and no police national computers, they would have driven off and probably would never have been caught, and that would have been the end of it. The car would have been found, it would have been treated as another car theft, end of story. But for some reason or other, they did stop, and one of the two men fired two shots into PC Gutteridge's head, which exited through his neck.
Yeah.
Now, in those days, there was a strong belief that the last thing that a person saw remained on his eyes,
yes.
and could be sort of developed like a photograph. So, to make the crime even worse, they then shot PC Gutteridge through both eyes to make sure that nothing could be revealed later on. The car was recovered
in Brixton. It was found in an alleyway behind some houses in Brixton, and it had blood on the running board. Now, almost instantly, the car was associated with the murder. Mm. And they started looking at who may have stolen the car. Sometime later, and it was sometime later, because obviously a big investigation was commenced. There was a PC who was the first one to deal with the murder. The body was actually found by a postman who had made a postal delivery to the post office up at Stapleford Abbots, which is still there. The building is still there. It's now a private house. Used to be by the roundabout at Passingford Bridge, used to be a tiny little humpback bridge. Now, I actually am old enough to remember that. I'm not old. I don't go quite back to 1927, but I do remember that being a little tiny humpback bridge. Yeah. And it was called Pinchback Bridge in those days. The postman had made his delivery of mail to the post office and then made his journey over Pinchback Bridge and was moving along the road towards Stapleford Abbots when he found the body of PC Gutteridge. So they had a connection between this car and the murder, but had no idea who had committed it. It was actually the next year when they started looking into things, and a Chief Inspector James Berrett from Scotland Yard was brought in to investigate it. A chap called Robert Churchill, who was a ballistic expert at Scotland Yard, was called in, and he started examining the shell cartridges, etc., and was quite happy that it was fired from a Webley pistol. Again, this is the very early days of such things as ballistic tests. When they started carrying out their investigations, they decided that a chap by the name of Frederick Brown, who was a well-known London criminal and car thief, may have been responsible. This is sort of underworld information, etc., that led to him. So police waited for him in South London and arrested him when he came back to his garage.
The crime we're talking about took place in 1927, so now things would move really, really quickly.
Absolutely.
But back in the day, you would have had a car that was empty with blood in it, and you'd had no way of tying in whose blood it was or any forensic.
Absolutely not.
There would be no DNA, be nothing.
No CCTV.
No.
Nothing at all.
No. All right, we're back with part two of Roy Tysack. Let me get your name right. Roy Tysack's Crime Time. I don't know where that came from. Roy is an ex-CID murder squad detective, toastmaster. He looks after music clubs. He also does stand-up comedy, I believe he did last night as well.
Yeah, a little bit of that as well. Why not?
Just throw it. And he also manages the lovely... What's your name in the corner?
It's Matthew Sherry.
There we go. Who's going to be on Bob's show. Now, we're talking about a murder that took place in 1927. As you said, a PC stopped... flagged down a car. Would have been completely empty on the roads in roundabout. It was at Stapleford Abbots, is it?
That's right.
That sort of area. And the policeman was shot, if you just missed the first bit, and it's how the police in those days actually managed to catch the criminal. So...
Okay, well, as I say, Robert Churchill, who was the Met Police ballistics expert, had recovered the 2.45 bullets that were prized out of the road surface at the scene, and he examined them and saw that they had peculiar markings on them. When they recovered the car, they found an empty cartridge case, which was marked with the marking RV1V, which actually turned out to be the markings of a Webley pistol from the First World War. Now, when they searched his garage, they found a couple of other cars that he had stolen and then part exchanged for various vehicles. And in that vehicle, they found a number of loaded firearms, including a .45 Webley revolver. Now, this was an excellent find because Mr. Churchill was then able to examine it and prove that the bullets fired into PC Gutteridge actually came from that .45 Webley. So they now had the definite link. They then realised that there had been two people at the scene, and they started looking at the associates of the man that they'd caught. And the most obvious candidate was a chap by the name of William Kennedy. Now, he was an interesting character, had quite a deep criminal past for all sorts of things, and he was well known in the Liverpool area, and very well known to the Liverpool police. So they started doing inquiries in Liverpool, and they actually tracked down where he was likely to be this evening. They set up roadblocks and sat in wait for him. And sure enough, William Kennedy turned up and was arrested. Now, what happened here was that There was a detective sergeant, Bill Mattison, of Liverpool Police, who knew him very well. He knew Kennedy from the past. He went up to him and said, "Hello, Bill, come on now." Now, at that point, Kennedy pulled out another revolver, stuck it in the policeman's ribs, and pulled the trigger. There was a bullet in the gun, it was fully loaded, but miraculously the gun jammed. So the detective lived to see another day.
Wow.
He then punched him in the face. That was a policeman punched the villain in the face, knocked him out, and he was restrained and arrested. When he was sitting on a bench in the police station, Kennedy said to the policeman, said, "I'm sorry, Bill, I've got no grudge against the police, but you should be in heaven by now, and there was one for me." So his intention was to shoot the policeman and then shoot himself.
Mm.
But of course that didn't happen. Now they now had two suspects. They had the gun, they had the shell casing, and they had to prove that it was all linked together. Well, that was down to Robert Churchill, basically, and it was one of the first uses of microscope to examine the shell cases and the bullets and to match them up. The case went to the Old Bailey, and he produced all his photographs, and he convinced the judge and the jury that those bullets were fired from that gun. And they both went to court. There was a what they call a cutthroat defence, which means that both defendants are blaming each other.
Yep.
Both admitted being there, but each said that the other fired the guns. And really, it ended up with both of them being hanged, facing the ultimate penalty. But it was never established 100% whether they were both involved in the shooting or whether one alone did the shooting of PC Gutteridge. As I say, they were both hanged. PC Gutteridge was buried in Worley.
Yep.
And later there was a memorial placed at the roadside, very close to the spot. And if anyone drives, if you're going down towards the Rabbits from Havering Atty Bower, along that road, if you look to the right, you will see that a section of the road, which was the old part of the road, has actually been renamed Gutteridge Lane.
Yep.
And just near that junction, you'll see the white headstone, which is a memorial to PC George Gutteridge, which remains at that scene now.
Mm.
One little interesting twist. Well, actually, two interesting twists. It turns out that the main suspect was represented by a barrister who turned out to have been the commanding officer of George Gutteridge's regiment during the First World War.
Oh.
So he knew him, and
yep,
he ended up actually defending the person that killed him.
Yep.
Which is a strange twist. And also, thanks to this case and another case of a fire in London, the 999 system was first introduced. Because when the postman tried to raise the alarm, he drove back to Stapleford Abbott's post office and tried to phone the police at Romford, but he didn't have any money for to make the call. And there was a great long debate and argument about whether or not the operator would put the call through.
Yeah.
So that delayed it. And the case of the fire in London was that somebody was trying to phone the fire brigade to say a building was on fire. But in those days, you didn't have STD. You had to ask the operator to put you through. And the operator said, "Well, there's a call. There's a queue. You're going to have to wait in the queue."
Yep.
And he said, "But this building's on fire." So I'm sorry, you're going to have to wait in the queue. So that delayed the fire brigade by quite a long while. So as a result of these two cases, they then introduced the 999 system.
Yeah.
So we have this murder and that fire to thank for that system.
That's amazing it's amazing to think they actually caught them. It's just when you think about the technology back then. It's
absolutely, yes.
Just amazing.
I mean, these days we would have had the whole scene sealed off. We would have had all the forensic suits on, and we would have gone over that ground with the search team on their hands and knees to found everything, cigarette ends and fibres and all sorts of things. It was very obvious that PC Gutteridge didn't have any chance to defend himself.
Yeah.
He was found in sort of a semi-sitting position. His truncheon and torch were still in his pocket.
Yeah.
He had his pencil in his hand, and his notebook was on the pavement. So obviously he had just put his hand up to stop the car, taking out his notebook, ready to take some details. And that's when they killed him.
Yeah.
A total unnecessary waste of life.
Yeah.
absolutely unnecessary.
Well, thank you very much for coming. You're back again next month.
Yes, indeed.
I'll ask you what you're talking about next month. We don't know.
But
if you want to catch Matthew Shepherd, who Roy manages, is coming up on Bob Simpson's show. He's going to be doing some live music. And what other, just to quickly mention, what other dates have we got coming up for Matthew?
Well, he's got all sorts. He's got his list that he will be reading out. But next Friday, 1 week's time, at the Fane Hall, which is in Church Road, Kelvedon Hatch, the Navestock Village Society are having a slightly belated St. George's dinner. We're actually putting on a play, mm-hmm. which we are calling a radio play, because that way we can keep our scripts, you see. We can read them at the same time. We don't have to learn all the words. It's a comedy called Trouble at Mill, mm-hmm. and Matthew is playing a part in that, and he will be performing one of his songs during the play.
Excellent.
It's £15 a head. For that, you're going to get a three-course meal as well. There's a patriotic sing-song at the end, and you get to see the play. So if anybody would like tickets for that, you can contact me on 0775 128 672, on my email, which is roy.tysak@btinternet.com. And then at 2 o'clock, Matthew will be reading out his full list of gigs for the coming months. But there's plenty going on.
Okay, great. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
There we go. Just briefly, didn't
still awake.
You're still awake. Oh, that's not nice. I'm rude. I was mesmerised. Mesmerised. Did you see what I
said? Oh, very good.
Good. Thank you very much to Roy Tysak. He'll be back again next month with another Crime Time. And don't forget, stay tuned, because Matthew Shepherd is going to be singing in about the next hour and a half. She's going to have a sandwich, aren't you, love?
Yeah,
he's going to go and have a sandwich.
I bet I have to pay for it.
Well, you should do. You're his manager.
I'll have to eat 15% of it then, won't I?
Well, you save all these. You keep all the receipts, Roy. That's what you need to do. Keep the receipts. Right, I'm going to play a little bit of music. Going to come back slightly late with the ads, but I'll be back in a while.